first smooth operation in Ferrari. Smooth operator.
Oh my god! It fucking happened, Knowles. Red Bull's run of 15 races in a row has been ended by Carlos Sainz of Ferrari. Whew, what a fucking race.
still coming down there, eh?
Man.
I was up in Canada this weekend, so I'm saying A a lot more, eh?
Ooh, we'll get to Canada later. It's going to be part of our who's not hot right now. But, ooh, man, Carlos Sainz.
Jeez. What a weekend. What a weekend. What a weekend for him, for Ferrari, for Fred Vasseur. A lot of thoughts to share on this race. Wow.
We got a lot to talk about. Obviously, we just saw what life is in F1 without Red Bull at the front, and we kind of love it. But before we get too excited, how about we roll that intro and then we get into it?
Roll it.
A question for all of you except Romain Grosjean.
To whom it may concern, fuck you.
More ladies in the paddock? Yeah, more paddock access to some women. There's too many dudes.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that, except that he was being a pussy.
Ooh, that last Max little tidbit on the intro sounds especially funny to me this weekend, as he wasn't even on the podium, man.
We're gonna make it out of Q2. Oh. Oops. Did we already say that?
No, we did not. No Red Bulls in Q2. First time in 5 years. And let me tell you something. It was the first time in 301 days since anyone else other than Red Bull has won. That's almost a full year. And Carlos Sainz gave Ferrari its 243rd win in their history, which is huge. Obviously, the number one, obviously, in the all-time records, but who's counting? I am.
I think we're all counting. We going into this weekend, or this past weekend, we talked about it on the pre Singapore episode. Both of us had a very good feeling that this weekend could be the weekend where Red Bull put in a shit performance compared to the rest of the season, or just didn't have the same success that they've seen this season. And my god, it could have gone worse for sure. Like, they could have both DNF'd, but it was still pretty bad.
So we thought they might be a little bit off their game, but it was in qualifying, it was dismal. It was a horrendous experience. I mean, yeah, why don't we just get it out of the way? It feels like that's, I mean, obviously Carlos Sainz won, but the fact that Red Bull wasn't even up there seems like a huge, huge upset. What the fuck happened to Red Bull this weekend?
I don't even know where to start. Let's say that. They went into this weekend, I don't know what it was, but we all kind of felt it. I don't know what it was about Singapore, but we felt it. People were saying it in the press. Red Bull even was like giving little bits of information that would have suggested that going into Singapore might be they may not have the same success that they've seen at the in the rest of the season. So both drivers, like in their post FP1 through FP3 interviews, were like, we'll be lucky to get points this weekend, basically, is what they were saying, which
is wild.
It seems crazy.
Yeah, we thought they might not be invincible this weekend, but this track is not that different to other street tracks. It's a bit faster than Monaco, but when you do well in Monaco, you usually do well in Singapore, and Red Bull dominated in Monaco. So it was a bit shocking to see how far back they were. There's a lot of talk about this new TD about flexi wings, right? That it didn't affect us, but maybe it did. And or maybe some people are saying, you know, without getting too much into it on this episode, but there is talk about flexible floors and how that might have gone against Red Bull. But in the end, from what I can gather, it's more that Red Bull couldn't run its car as low as they usually do, and they had to bring up the ride height, and they never got into the sweet spot for qualifying. Even though in the race, though, at some points they were really fast. So for those of us who think, oh yeah, Red Bull's done, no, they're not. They'll be they'll be back.
That's something I do want to also say. It's like, for those of us who are, you know, who are super hard right now for the fact that Red Bull had a shitty weekend, I think we should all calm down and say they're probably going to come back at Suzuka and just remind everyone how dominant they have been. But let's not take away from it the glory that everybody was a Tifosi.
Everybody
was a Ferrari fan last weekend. I don't care if you weren't, other than Red Bull fans, which, you know, who gives a fuck about them right now? But and I say that too, because as a Merc fan, we had our moment of dominance, but this season has been unlike any other that we've seen, and even in the Merc period of dominance. So to see that happen in Singapore this weekend just reminded everyone of why we watch this sport.
Mm-hmm. And how quickly things can change. So have hope. It's hard, you know, it's been hard this year to have any hope if you're not a Red Bull fan, but this might give us a glimpse of what could happen in 2024 if teams get their act together. I haven't seen Ferrari operationally this good and make all the strategy calls, every single one, over a weekend. I haven't seen that in a long time, and it feels good. It seems like the whole Vasseur management style, and especially Carlos Sainz off of the summer break, he is just, I don't know what he ate or what he was doing, what tapas he had, but he is, man, he's on fire. Fuego.
Dude, I gotta say, you know, obviously we're gonna look at the fact that Red Bull did not perform this weekend. However, we also need to talk about something that may not be a popular opinion in the world of F1, but Charles Leclerc has always been the golden boy at Ferrari.
Watch it, Knowles.
He has been. And, yeah, correct. You know, and kind of the prodigy that everybody was looking to see come up at Ferrari, grew up in the Ferrari Driver Academy. You've got a guy in Carlos Sainz who is driving at a really good level right now. He's second pole in two races.
Back to back.
And you know, didn't necessarily have the best start to this season for a variety of different reasons. But yeah, after the summer break, he seems like a different person, a different driver, a different smooth operator than we have seen this the rest. He wasn't a very smooth operator early in the season. This is a smooth operation. He was flawless this weekend.
He's definitely worked with his race engineer over the summer break on how to put together his weekends, how to get into the weekends faster and not waste time and not lose time in terms of setup, you know, vis-a-vis Charles. And there is also talks about how Ferrari has nailed setup now on a mechanical platform. They've found something that's unlocked a setup that works really well. I would say that for those who might think that Leclerc might be slipping, I just think that Carlos has elevated his game so much that now we have two really good drivers. If you look at Monza, very close in qualifying. And if you look in Singapore, up until the final few corners, actually Leclerc was ahead of Sainz. So it's close up there.
Yeah, and that's fair. Those are good stats to bring up. I'm not going to hate on those.
Facts, I would say. And Leclerc did, like, let's get into the race, man. Leclerc did play a bit of the role of the sacrificed number two car this weekend for Ferrari to get that win, right? So clearly Sainz and Ferrari came up with this plan of bunching up the field and not really getting too bunch of a lead so that basically other cars couldn't undercut. As we know, in Singapore, the undercut is really strong, and Leclerc actually lost a race here in 2019 to Vettel, and he wasn't really happy back then because he had qualified on pole. And that strategy worked. But in order for that to work, Leclerc had to pass Russell at the start, which he did, and hold the pack back a bit so that Sainz was protected. And you knew at that point that if there wasn't a kind of safety car for Charles, that it was all in for Sainz on this race.
Yeah, let's also talk about the fact this is maybe the smartest piece of driving I think happened maybe all season. Carlos Sainz keeping Lando within 1 second so Lando could basically hold up the Mercedes was genius.
Last episode when we were doing the Monza review, we're referring to Albon versus Norris. It's like, oh, that's the car you want to see behind you is the McLaren because right. It doesn't have that good straight line speed. And Sainz, this is where Sainz and Ferrari admitted that it was all Sainz and not them, decided to give Lando DRS, meaning to let him in to the 1 second window on certain parts of the track so that Lando could defend against the Mercs that were on much, much fresher tires. And we all thought, didn't you not think that Merc was going to have a 1-2 at one point?
I actually didn't think they were going to. I mean, they were charging hard, but that last 12 laps of that race, I mean, come the fuck on. If you do not appreciate that kind of racing, you should never watch motorsport or sports ever again.
Or any sports because you suck.
Yeah, period. Don't watch sports at all. But no, just to finish that, like, I think what really got me was Carlos had been so good all weekend, and the moment he got on the radio with his race engineer, right, and he goes, and they're basically telling him about the gap to Lando, he's like, I know it's on purpose. I was like, barring an incident, you know, and obviously we got one in the end on lap 62, but barring an incident, he just nailed it.
He played all the right cards and at the right time. The Mercs came in charging because we had a VSC late and no one else really pit. But not only did Merc sacrifice P2 because Russell was running second at that time, but he was on same tires as Sainz and was not going to make any dent in that lead. He was just going to cruise home. They decided to pit both drivers and lost track position, and they made their way back. And you got to love that as pure racing fans. I think that was the right call by Merc. Very ballsy. Didn't pay off in the end, but those Mercs came in charging. And actually, it looked like Hamilton was the faster Mercedes driver in that last stint. We saw what happened in the end. Carlos gave Lando DRS, helped him defend against Russell. Because if Russell had passed Norris, then Sainz did not have anything to defend against the Mercs. So it was over. It was pretty much game over. So that was the only thing he could do to protect his lead. And it worked brilliantly. So brilliantly that Russell got frustrated or there's a lapse in concentration and he hit the wall and ended in the barrier on the last lap. After a great weekend where he dominated Hamilton, he scores no points and Hamilton gets a podium. His 196th in his career.
The cool down room was pretty funny. He with Lewis, he was like, you know, somebody were talking about the fact that he had 196 podiums, and between Carlos and Lando, neither of them even have 100 races under their belt. So just goes to show how dominant Lewis has been in his time. But what really struck me was just how subdued Lewis was on the podium, because he kind of knew that, you know, in the end, you put yourself in a position in any sport to take an advantage when someone else gives it to you, you know, or messes up or makes mistake. That's part of the game. But I think Lewis did well to not over celebrate on the podium, because I'm sure George was absolutely gutted with the mistake he made. So, it's just a good teammate maneuver, but
he didn't rub it in or anything.
But my favorite moment in the post race, besides the Lewis moment with Carlos and Lando, was Lando and Carlos when they first saw each other out of the cars. it was like the final scene in Top Gun when Hollywood and Wolfman see Maverick, not knowing that they survived, and then Lando's like, they look at each other like arms wide open, just stoked, and obviously Lando's like, thanks buddy for keeping me in DRS so I didn't get absolutely just eaten alive by the Mercedes. I'm getting chills thinking about it, but just seeing four cars that close together on the final, like, what was it, 12 laps?
Yeah, especially the last 5-6 laps, they were all within a second and a half.
Oh my god.
You know, any little mistake could, because even when Russell was, he had a sniff at Norris. If you took out Russell from the frame, Lewis is also right behind them too. It was just nuts. Very exciting racing. I do think at that point, and I'm not saying Merck should have, but I think that if Hamilton and Russell had switched, Hamilton would have made the pass, and if he made the pass on Norris, he would have won. And getting back to your point, I feel that Hamilton being so subdued also comes from the fact that he knows he's been not performing up to his standard in qualifying. And he even said, I should have put this on pole and I would have won the race. And he actually believes that. And because I don't think Ferrari had pace over everyone this weekend, but they played it brilliantly and circumstantially, just everything kind of fell into their lap and they took it. And operationally, it's a huge win, but it wasn't on pure pace. And that's why I think Lewis, man, because they've been going at it for 2 years and throwing everything, trying to get that win. And he still hasn't won since Saudi 2021. So, yeah, I think less than thinking about Russell, he was more pissed off at himself for his performances.
Yeah, I think both are true. I think at the end, though, what I'm excited about, you know, George will learn from what happened. He just got too close to the wall. And that was it.
He kind of followed Lando into the wall because Lando clipped the wall.
Yeah.
And maybe he was kind of just following the wheels so closely. Maybe that happens. And
Lando even said it after he crossed the finish line. He's like, I think I hit the wall.
Yeah.
real cheeky, though.
He copied me, he said. except that Russell ended into the wall. And Russell was in tears. And he's an emotional driver, whether it's good or bad. And it's just... it's nice to see. I guess I'm not making fun of him, but it was it was exciting.
Yeah, George can definitely be a little bit stiff as far as personalities go. But when it comes down to it, it does really affect him because I think he knows he's got the talent to be successful. So when he comes within a lap of potentially winning a race or getting a podium, whatever it might be, and bins it, it's gonna hurt. And I just, you know, you do have to feel for the guy. In the end, though, we as fans won regardless. And you know, when you look at what we saw, I'm excited about what this means for the future. I mean, McLaren with their updates, seeing that Mercedes is actually pushing up front. We're going to get into Aston Martin later. I think there's some big question marks around that team right now. But, and then obviously Ferrari with, I think we're starting to see Fred Vasseur's impact on the team. And this was an example of it. Hopefully we can see it more consistently with them. I mean, I always like a little bit of a Ferrari choke, but...
Oh, but, yeah, but speaking of choking, though, was that a choke from Russell, though?
Yes.
Yeah, hard, totally, yes. Right?
Yeah.
And here's my question. Was it, because this has to be a combination of different fractures, but was it more the pressure of him trying to go for the pass on Lando and potentially thinking he could get a win? Or was it more the fact that Lewis is all over his ass?
Lewis, man. Lewis is all over his ass.
There's an interesting dynamic going on there, I feel. Because Russell seems to have gotten the edge in qualifying, but in the race, Lewis comes back, and it could get spicy there. I am of the opinion that Russell makes too many mistakes, and Toto was saying, yeah, better make the mistakes now when we're not challenging for a title. But he finds new ways, and he makes new mistakes. He's not polished yet. He's kind of gone through his 2018 Max Verstappen phase where he was kind of fumbling a bit left and right before he became super consistent in what he is now.
I think Merck has a good problem on their hands where it's like, all right, there's no real beef between George and Lewis. George has some yeah, like you said, some refining to do. What was the word he used?
Polish right. Before he becomes the polished.
He needs a polish up. You know, I think the other thing here too is there's clearly a battle for this P2 position. Just let's not even look at the points, but if we're looking at P2 and the constructors right now, regardless of points, the rest of the season feels like it's going to be a shootout. And, you know, George has to come through to make sure that if Lewis isn't in his zone, George has got to be there to put it in. George almost got pole, right?
Yeah, very close.
Very close. The Mercs are, you know, Mercedes wasn't looking strong at the beginning of the season. Now here they are. McLaren, same. Ferrari, same. So these teams are clearly learning. I think another thing we need to understand is at Ferrari, like I was talking about earlier, Charles versus Carlos, like Golden Boy versus, you know, the
smooth operator.
Smooth operator. Carlos is looking like the guy right now. And so maybe there's not a 1-2 situation at Ferrari. There's a whoever's got the best hand that weekend needs to be given priority.
You know what this reminds me of on a lesser scale, obviously, but it kind of reminds me of Hamilton Rosberg.
A little bit, yeah.
Clearly, Hamilton was the faster, naturally talented driver, but Rosberg was just kind of worked at it and chipped at it. And it seems like science is that. He's not the Max Verstappen, the Charles Leclerc that everyone's been hyping for years, but with work and perseverance, he's up there. And who knows if he could get a car that suits his driving style. And with a bit of luck, he could pull in a title at some point.
I mean, let's see. I mean, let's see where these teams can make up ground on Red Bull. You know, I think this weekend, just going to Red Bull, understanding they had no answers. They had no answers, and so that's a possibility at Ferrari.
So we kind of talked about it, touched upon it a bit earlier with Red Bull, with the whole ride height situation. If you look at the race, Max Verstappen was actually really fast during the race. He showed once again that Checo Perez is of no match to Max Verstappen, even in a car that's struggling. He almost got Leclerc on the line. He was only a few tenths away. And if the first safety car didn't come in at that time, Max Verstappen could have been in the fight for the win. It was qualifying where they messed up, and in the race, they were actually there. And he was the fastest driver in the end behind Lewis until Lewis kind of hit traffic and was slowed down by the top three, which is funny
to say. I mean, I'm going to say this, though. Max was really showed his whiny bitch self this weekend quite a bit.
How so?
Well, he just a lot of complaining on the radio about like other drivers impeding him during when he's doing like out on a hot lap. But we can also talk about Max should have been penalized at least once, if not three times.
Okay, so you're referring to qualifying where he sat at the end of the pit lane, green light didn't go, which looked like he was just holding up the whole field.
And then his race engineer covered for him.
Exactly. GP covered for him. And then he impeded Logan Sargeant, which I didn't think it was impeding. But the one where he should have gotten penalized was when he was in the way, clearly, of Tsunoda.
Yeah.
There's always a hearing in which both teams sent their representatives. And obviously, AlphaTauri, which is the Red Bull Junior team, did not send anyone, which meant that there wasn't any penalty, which I think shouldn't matter. It shouldn't be a court. It should just be a penalty or not. It should just be slam dunk, which that should have been, in my opinion. You're right. He should have gotten at least one penalty.
Here's the rule. You didn't abide by that rule. You get a penalty. I don't understand why it has to be so convoluted. But again, even Pierre Gasly had a situation this past weekend where he felt that the rules are not black and white enough. We saw the same thing in the case of Max, where it's like the team got a $5,000 fine and he got a reprimand.
Which is nothing.
It's a slap on the wrist. So Max isn't going to learn from that. He's just going to keep doing it if he needs to. You know, I thought even on the pit lane, bullshit. You know, like get out there. And there's another conversation that could be had about we need to change the qualifying format because, I mean, the way that these cars are stacking up, you know, maybe it's that each team gets a hot lap. I don't know what the format is, but each team...
Ooh, one shot qualifying? We've had that in the past. It comes to a different set of problems, but there's definitely something F1 can do to stop, because it looks silly when everyone...
It's every weekend this is happening. Yeah.
There's one moment where there are four cars going pretty much on track. They're all lined up as they were trying to set up for a hot lap, and it's just dangerous, actually.
Yeah, it is.
But speaking of penalties, there has been talk also about the 5-second penalties that the FIA gives out and how sometimes some drivers get away with it too easily. Like, there was talk about Lewis when he hit Oscar Piastri in Monza. He only got a 5-second penalty, but in the end, he ended up canceling that by just pulling away, which doesn't fit the crime. Should there be 10-second penalties for certain incidents when you ruin someone's race? Because I don't know if you saw, speaking of Red Bull, Perez was fighting to get some points, and he absolutely T-boned Albon, who was going for points, and he only got a 5-second penalty, which had no impact on Perez's result, but Albon ended up finishing P11 behind Haas, which is a competitor for Williams, came back scoring P10, which is great for Haas, but without that incident, Albon gets those points, right? So, yeah, these penalties, the FIA needs to be, what do we want? We want consistency and we want transparency. And I don't feel like we're getting it once again. I keep saying.
For sure. Yeah, I think there's got to be, the teams need to sit down in the offseason and figure this out, because it's like every year this happens. Somehow there's inconsistency. But, you know, regardless, beyond what happens off track, what happened the moment... Checo and Max after Q2 was probably some of my favorite driver disappointment content since like Alan Prost in the 90s. like, honest to God. And there's someone we got to talk to and thank for that, and it's Liam Lawson. Like, hell yeah, dude.
You're referring to the fact that Liam Lawson's the one who kicked out Max from getting into
Liam went faster than Max and kicked Max out of Q2.
And when he did that, I think that everyone in the world clapped, unless you're a Max fan, obviously.
Everyone in the world. I texted every Max fan I know, and I was like, get fucked. Like, give us this for one weekend. And most of them were like, I don't want to hear it. Oh, you're such a Lewis fanboy. It's, whatever, man. Listen, Max is having a great season. I've admitted that. But give us this and move on.
Let us enjoy this. Also, Lawson scored points in his third race only, P9. And he also put up a fight when Verstappen came up and passed him. He didn't just move over, which I liked very much. And I got to say, I was a bit worried about this when Lawson did so well in his first race and then in the second. And then now, I think Red Bull has got a problem on their hands for next year. Who's going to race those cars? They've got 5 drivers, 4 seats. Someone's going to be disappointed.
Right now, the camp for me, who's the disappointed camp, is going to be Yuki Tsunoda.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tsunoda also, which, by the way, I don't know what the hell's going on with him. Didn't start in Monza and could barely complete a lap in this race. 4 corners because he got hit by who? Checo Perez.
Once again.
So Tsunoda is he's got all the bad luck coming at him right now, because I would have loved to see Tsunoda and Lawson to compare those two, obviously, because Lawson's doing really good right now. But we want to see what Tsunoda would have done, because I'm sure he would have scored points too, because Tsunoda's been racing really well.
He hasn't been racing poorly. I would say for Liam Lawson to come in and race the way he has been, the kid is making a case to have a seat next year, and whether it's at AlphaTauri,
he's got to,
or somewhere else. I mean, like, I don't really want to focus on Logan Sargeant too much, but I mean, he's just having bad weekend after bad weekend. And if we look at the way that the Williams is performing under Albon, Lawson could be a good number two there with him.
That's what people are saying, because obviously Red Bull loves Danny Ric, and we all love Danny Ric. Obviously, it would be unfair to say, oh, Lawson is putting in these performances, because who knows, maybe Danny Rick would have finished P7.
Yeah, Danny Rick's a proven race winner though too,
right? So but independently from Danny Rick being the good driver he is, Lawson is equally showing the world that holy shit, we've got a good rookie. He might be in contention for rookie of the year, to be honest.
You think Helmut Marko finally is like, what have I done? I mean, realistically, it's a good problem for Red Bull to have. They're like, oh, we've got to choose between talented drivers. Poor us. But
oh, he's gonna love this. By the way, Lawson's going to race next year, and he is most likely taking that second seat at Williams. But let's see. This is silly season to talk, obviously, but he's been doing really well. And a quick Danny Rick update. It seems that we will not see him in Suzuka, and most likely Qatar. Mm-hmm. Or Austin. So we'll keep an eye on that.
He loves Austin.
He does love Austin. It would be a great story if he comes back.
I think that would be a better story than if he came back in Qatar. But yeah. I hope Liam Lawson to me this weekend, in almost every weekend since Danny Rick's unfortunate incident, he's made his case for me. We'll obviously see what happens going forward. But yeah. What
I've shown enough already, because
kicking Max out of qualifying, that's enough for me.
all right, Knowles, take it easy. We're making t-shirts, baby. Yeah,
that's more spite than actual, you know. this is why I'm not a race strategist.
Lawson world champion.
Yeah. Claimy Lee Curtis right here, folks.
So what else do we get? We said K-Mag put in good results. He finally outqualified Hulk, which is good. We said he needed results, and he put together a good weekend and brought a point for Haas, which is really important in the constructors.
He said he never fought harder for a single point in Formula One than he did this past weekend.
Damn. Well done, K-Mag.
And also some great content from Haas. K Mag and Nico and Hulk after the race in the ice bath was
yeah,
it was pretty funny.
Just two blondes sitting in a ice bucket. Speaking of Haas, huge update coming up in Austin home race. They said they're throwing the biggest update package of the year for that. AlphaTauri had their huge update package here. McLaren only gave Norris the update. If you're wondering why Piastri was a little further away. Also, it was his first time in Singapore, not the easiest track. But we do need to talk about Aston Martin.
Yep.
Alonso struggled with a car that we thought would be very quick here because he almost got pole in Monaco. Lance Stroll put it in the wall in Q2, causing a red flag.
I think even 10 years ago, Lance might not have any legs anymore.
Jimmy lost his leg in 99. Not lost his leg, broke his leg, excuse me. that he could definitely have had a similar,
yeah, or at least broken or something. I mean, he had that.
How quickly he removed his hands, though, right? That was good reflex.
Real smart, because he felt that he binned it and was like, oh, I'm going in the wall. I mean, he could have had an even more catastrophic. He's had some hand jobs this year. not to make light of the incident, but you know, he started the season with a pretty big hand that. Some hand stuff going on, so I don't know. It might have fucked his hands up even more. So it's. I'm just happy he walked away. I really am, because that hit when I saw, he didn't end up racing the next day because of like concussion protocol. I mean, that was a violent accident.
Right. Also, the rumor is that Aston Martin was afraid that he'd been it again, and in a cost cap, it would be less of a risk to. Because they could have definitely fixed that car. It wasn't that bad in terms of damage.
Well, they're never going to publicly say that.
Oh yeah, I mean this is the Silver Spoon Stroll GP Racing team, aka Aston Martin. If you don't know, his father owns the team, and he's only there because of his father. Because performance wise, he's not doing very well. And in case you're wondering, was there a technical failure on his car? No. To quote Norris a few years ago. He just ran out of talent there, trying to make up way too much time in the last corner, which you can't do. There are laws of physics. There's you can drive a car until a certain limit. And when you go over that limit, you lose control.
Yeah, it looks like he put it on the curb. It looks like he must have lost downforce on the back end, and it just went out from underneath him and was straight into that wall.
So here's the deal. Aston Martin says they're launching a Le Mans project. I would say...
Is this some tinfoil hat shit?
This is some, a little bit more, one level up. So it's not like, it's not, I heard some guys say this at a coffee shop, but it's, people are talking about Aston Martin putting in a big program for Le Mans, like Ferrari did this year. And, you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world if Lance went and led that project and you would put two other really good drivers with him to make sure, you know, they got the win or they got the results. It wouldn't be bad for him to be a professional driver in Le Mans because he's clearly not good enough for F1.
If there's one really big takeaway from this weekend, it's not Red Bull is on the outs. I think they just had a bad weekend, which happens. I think anybody who's like, oh, well, this is... I hope we see better racing. I hope we see more of what we saw this past weekend, but I don't think we will. I think Red Bull is going to come back with a vengeance in Suzuka. The big thing for me is who is Aston Martin, and like genuinely, who's this team going to be?
It's been tough to predict. They got a podium two races ago. Now we've got Suzuka, Qatar, Austin, Mexico, Interlagos, Vegas, baby, and Abu Dhabi left.
You can only say Vegas, baby. That's the only way you can say it on this podcast.
But you mentioned Suzuka. Yeah, let's get into that. We're going to Suzuka back-to-back, and this is my favorite racetrack of all time. I always say it's Spa, and then I say it's that one because I can't choose between those two. They're just amazing. It's just a big balls driver circuit. Unfortunately, not the best for passing, but if you've never seen a car go through 130R and those S's in the first sector, it is magnificent.
Something I definitely want to see in real life.
Absolutely. Actually, when I went to Japan a couple years ago, we flew over this track and it felt like I was flying over a holy site for myself. Wow. I was pointing. People were like, what are you pointing at?
There's nothing. Like, there's Mecca. And then there's Suzuka.
There's Suzuka and Spa. Yeah.
And Spa. Right. Perfect.
Okay. So we're going to Suzuka. Not only did I not get any points on you, no one got any points last weekend on the Stand Championship. So it's a standstill right now.
Ooh, nice pun. I like that. It's a good one.
Pun intended.
The standstill.
You were saying you see Red Bull back on top. Who do you see? What's your top five? What's your Gromo?
Here we go. I'm going Max pole. Mm-hmm. I'm going Max P1. He's going to get back. I think we're going to see a little bit more from the other teams. I'm going to go with, I think, Lewis P2. Lewis loves this track. I think we're going to see Charles P3, Checo P4, and the smooth operator P5. Okay. And Gromo is going to come from, shit. I wish we'd given it to Lance last weekend, because even as scary as that was, it's still a Gromo.
I called Lance, by the way.
Oh, you did.
Ooh, or are you giving it to me?
I don't know. I don't know, because a Gromo is really a little bit more silly than that. Like, that was a driver error, but it wasn't like mm-hmm. I'm going to hit the wrong button on my warm-up lap and then blame another driver.
Given the current regulations of the Stand Championship, I will not accept that as a Gromo.
All right, although fair. I appreciate that.
I think about it. Yeah. Right.
And for my Gromo, I'm going to go with Logan Sargeant.
Classic. Damn, okay. I agree with you. Max is coming back with a vengeance. He said that on the sim, when they were preparing for this doubleheader, they were terrible at Singapore, but they were really good in Suzuka, so I think that'll be back. I'm calling Red Bull 1-2. And this is the Claim Lee Curtis moment of the podcast.
Oh boy, here we go.
Oscar Piastri, first podium in Formula 1.
Shoot.
Yeah, Hamilton P4.
Okay.
And Leclerc P5. With the Gromo going to Stroll.
Just back-to-back Strolls.
Back-to-back, you never know. He's come back. Maybe those hands are a little tired still.
A little shaky. Yeah, a little shaky.
You know, a little shaky.
One thing we didn't talk about was Alpine having Ocon, I think, quickly. I think,
absolutely, yes. Thank you.
Quickly, I think Ocon is going to have a good race this coming week. Alpine coming.
Ocon P4 last year holding off Lewis.
Yeah. I think we'll see a better race from Alpine this weekend.
Yeah, and Ocon had an amazing pass on Alonso, which I thought was one of the best moves of the season in Singapore, and Gasly brought it in P6. Good points for the
good
team.
Good points for them.
And speaking of drivers moving on up, Lewis Hamilton now P3 in the Drivers' Championship, 10 points clear of Fernando Alonso. And in the Constructors' Championship, it's getting tight up there.
Oh, yeah.
Ferrari's closing in on Mercedes, and McLaren is closing in on Aston Martin. 7 races and about 80 points to go. It's on.
It's on. I don't really care about what's happening in the P1 spot, but everything else I'm here for. Let's go.
Let's do it. That about wraps it up for us in Singapore. Suzuka is next, one of the drivers' favorite tracks, one of our favorite tracks. Let's see if Ferrari can continue its momentum. But honestly, we're getting ready for Red Bull to get back in it, maybe even clinch the title, because that is one thing they could do this weekend.
That's right. It's a strange home race for them. They get too many home races, this team.
Yeah, they do. The whole half Belgian, half Dutch.
Japanese, sort of.
Austria, Japan. Yeah, enough. Enough of Red Bull. I need 2023 to end.
Figure out your home. This existential crisis at Red Bull about where they're from.
So that's it for us on this episode. Make sure to follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, @TheGrandstandF1.
Give us a follow wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we're there.
From us at the Grandstand, we'll see you after Suzuka.